Mediated conversation on SAFM.
25 minutes to 9. Good morning to you. Over the last few weeks, the National Treasury has now confirmed it's officially proposing what's called a two-pot retirement funding system. At the moment, generally speaking, when you're paid a salary, some of that money goes into your retirement fund. You can't access that money until you retire. The point is to ensure that you actually retire, that when you retire, you still have the money available. But it leads to some difficult outcomes. For example, some people find they need money urgently for some reason. As a result, they quit their job in a bid to access their pension. At the same time, some unions have demanded the system change to give people more flexibility. But there are still risks. Some people may take money out of their pension fund to start a business. The business could go bust, and then you're left with nothing. So then, what is being proposed? Will it work, and what impact will it have? This is your mediated conversation this morning. First, you'll hear what's being proposed from Ismail Moniat. He's the Acting Director General at the National Treasury. He's also the Deputy Director General for Tax and Financial Sector Policy. Professor Alex van den Heever is a Professor of Social Security at Wits University. And then, the personal finance aspect of this, the CEO of the Money Savvy Group is Catherine Main. We start then with the Acting Director General at the National Treasury, Ismail Moniat. Mr. Moniat, good morning and thank you for your time.
Good morning, Stephen.
Firstly, at the moment, when you put money into a pension, when are you able to get that money out? What's the current system?
In the current system, you take it out when you reach age 55, then you have access to it. You have to annuitize some of it, so you get one-third, and two-thirds you have to annuitize. Now, that's the ideal, and that's how, for decades, the system worked. In our system, unfortunately, there was a gap in that when you resigned from work, you were able to then access your entire savings, your retirement savings. You paid a withdrawal tax, but you had access to all of it. And that's where we have the big problem, Stephen. That firstly, as it is, South Africans don't save enough. And two, when they do save, people work, especially at the lower income end, members were withdrawing their savings when they changed their jobs. Now, we've taken a number of measures the last few years to try and get South Africans to at least preserve most of what they've saved for retirement so that it's available, as you pointed out, when they retire, and not to resign and think that you're going to have access to all of your funds. But we've also realized that you can't have a pure approach on this, that people do have emergencies during their life cycle of work, and that we want to now create a system where you can access one-third reasonably easily, but the two-thirds contribution you make, that you will not be able to access until you retire.
How did you come to the one-third, two-thirds system? What was it about those particular numbers that seems so attractive?
Look, we've tried to keep the system simple. I mean, part of the retirement reform is that it must be understandable to all. So we've been trying to harmonize the system. Now, one-third, two-thirds is what you can withdraw at retirement, and two-thirds is what you have to annuitize. And we've just thought, if we just take that approach of one-third, two-thirds, it makes sense. You could have made it 40, 60%. You could have made a different share. But we've just opted that the one-third, two-third has been traditionally a number that people understand. And so we'll keep it simple and keep to those numbers.
I could imagine an argument that would say, I understand the one-third, two-third, but maybe the proportion should change depending on how old you are. So that if you're a 25-year-old, you could take out less, a smaller proportion, than if you were, say, 63.
I think that there's many good arguments that can be put. And there's no doubt that we could refine the system. But the more you do that, the more complexity you introduce. And effectively, it means members don't understand their funds, and they do tend to withdraw more and more. And one could even argue that as you get older, you need to be more careful as well when you withdraw and how you withdraw, because there's a form of monetary illusion. People think they've, even when they say that they might have, a lot of money, but they'll find that very quickly, because we live longer, and especially if you've reached your 60s, the chances are you live longer than the rest of the population. you're going to find that you're going to be without money at some point in your life when you are most vulnerable.
Will there also be limits on how often you could draw money from the one third? I saw somewhere it would only be once a year.
Yes. Look, we're going to have to introduce just some administrative rules, because having all of this also means that the system becomes more expensive to administer. And we are trying to keep the system simple. And so to have some simple rules, like you can access once a year only, say in the month of your birthday or something like that, because that will hopefully keep the charges in the system down. One of our big reforms has been that we felt that the industry was having too many charges. They were layered and the total was too high, which meant that members actually saved much less. And so that is a huge part of this reform, is keep it simple, keep the costs down. And in fact, down the line, we want to consolidate and we want to make sure that we can bring in more people to save, even if they are working on contract, that there'll be what we call mandatory enrollment that we want to introduce, so many more people save. So we have a tranche of those reforms still to do. And the most important one, I would say, is to consolidate the funds, because we've got far too many, and that's what drives charges.
And then would you also reduce the amount of tax if you take money out of the savings pot?
My lips are sealed on tax. No, I'm joking. Look, at the moment, what we've got is just the current system, the current withdrawal table. So once you start accessing, you will pay the tax on withdrawal. But let me say this, Stephen, that we are looking all the time to try and create the right incentives for people to stay in the fund as long as possible. And it's possible that we could think about tweaking the system even on the tax side, so that we actually encourage people to save and to keep their money there as long as possible.
Yes, Mamamania, thank you very much indeed. Acting Director General in the National Treasury, also the Deputy Director General for Tax and Financial Sector Policy. You were there, SAFM, 18 minutes to 9. You mediated a conversation around the two-pot pension system that's been proposed continues. Professor Alex van den Heerff is a Professor of Social Security Systems at Wits University. Professor, good morning.
Good morning.
I would imagine there are pros and cons to this plan. Firstly, does the current system need a reform? Does it need a change?
Yes, it does. I think a lot of the issues that are raised in the Treasury document are correct. And we have a lot of imperfections in the framework, which mean that individual behavior and their response to their sort of retirement savings is very often counterproductive for their own survival later on in life. And that's where you can withdraw your entire pension on moving employer, and people will move employer multiple times in their lifetimes. So there is an important aspect to that requires that one preserves to retirement. The problem with introducing strong measures for preservation to retirement is you're pretty much locked in. If you suddenly have a need, then you can't access those funds. So I think with the configuration, the two-pot configuration, it's potentially a useful one to deal with the incentive for people to withdraw their entire fund when they move, because now they've got access to some funds, and perhaps because of the tax incentives, they will actually keep their money to retirement, even though they could withdraw it. So many people make big errors in withdrawing their pension funds when they're sort of relatively younger, and they don't understand the consequences. They invested in the wrong thing. They take risks with the money. They end up using the money to pay off debts. All of those things are very, very bad and very risky. So I think it's a movement in the right direction, but it's by no means solving all of the problems that we have in the retirement space.
I would imagine that our pension system, like others, is probably modelled on what may be started in places like Europe, where one person, one salary may feed just four people, or more likely two people, or even one person. Here, where people need to feed many people in their family, one salary we know can easily feed nine people, it would seem to me much more likely that there'll be demands for people to access their savings pot whenever they can, just to survive. In other words, if people can access it once a year, the risk is that because of the demands upon them, they will access it every year.
Well, technically, they have quite a lot of discretion not to contribute into a retirement fund to the full extent that is that gets you the full tax deduction, so up to sort of 27.5% of the taxable income. So that's quite a large portion of their income they can contribute, but not everybody does. So some people do retain that sort of discretion to spend by not contributing everything into their provident fund. So this is only dealing with those contributions that go into the fund, and that they will be split between the sort of the two pots or the three pots, because your historical contribution to your retirement fund to date, your provident fund, if you're under the age of 55, will actually be in a so-called vesting pot. And then there will be a savings pot and a retirement pot. But I think that what we want to do is get people to actually contribute more in. And that issue that you've raised about having to look after sort of large families, that's also a very important part of the protection that these funds are meant to provide, is that they also provide death and disability coverage. There's an insurance component that comes with it too when you're contributing into these funds. And anybody that doesn't want to contribute into a retirement fund is potentially prejudicing their dependents down the line. And so this is part of the imperfection of our retirement model, which doesn't individualize the protection. It's all centered around the breadwinner. And that means that dependents are at risk in relation to the conduct of the breadwinner. And it's very difficult to control what individuals will do. So there's this sort of tension between a sort of paternalistic approach and one that lets people sort of make their own decisions.
Is our system that's being proposed now, the two-pot system, is it very different to the social security systems in other countries? I mean, are we the only people who are going to be letting people do this?
Other countries actually have, more advanced countries than South Africa, like the European settings, is that their retirement arrangements are much more comprehensive, in that they will have sort of three tiers of protection, a sort of a universal basic allocation, a pension allocation, a basic earnings-related component, which is often run on a social insurance arrangement, and then a kind of supplementary framework, which is along the lines of our private environment. And so they will have these three tiers, which then offer much more complete protection. The problem in South Africa is that really our retirement arrangement hasn't emerged with the social security mindset in place. It's really been an industry-driven and an employer-driven framework that's evolved. And so we're kind of working from where our system started. And the employer approach creates all sorts of barriers to coherent preservation. One of the big problems that we have is not just the movement between funds, but if you move to self-employment from having been employed, let's say, in a corporate where you've got a group scheme, is that you then can't access a group scheme. In the medical schemes reforms of 1998, that issue was addressed by requiring that all open medical schemes, your discoveries and so on, have to take individuals as well as employers. We don't have the same arrangement in the retirement system. In the retirement system, you're part of the group scheme while you're with the employer, then you leave, then you're on your own. You've got to take out a retirement annuity, which is very expensive, and the value for money is questionable. And so there is a big problem in continuity there. The system doesn't actually give you access to a product. So this is also part of the portability problem not addressed by this two-pot system, which does need to be looked at as well, in addition to the sort of wider social security reform, which we do require in South Africa.
Well, I was going to come to this because clearly the window for reform is open. There have been demands for it. Are there other reforms we should implement?
Well, I think that there's probably going to be further discussions on the sort of comprehensive social security front. I think that these kinds of proposals coming from National Treasury are entirely compatible with a discussion on retirement reform. They're starting to look at the social security requirements of the system rather than just kind of finding, you know, supporting the industry. And we've got to create mechanisms which allow people to, for instance, move between employers smoothly, take their funds with them. Those kinds of imperfections can all be addressed through coherent regulatory reform. The wider structural reforms potentially require consideration of other kinds of institutions that need to be introduced, either a social insurance structure that you can join because no private arrangement is available, or a mandatory scheme that everybody must participate within. All of these are models that do have to be discussed going forward. But this kind of proposal, I would argue, is in the right direction.
Professor, thank you very much indeed. Professor Alex van den Heerfer, Professor of Social Security Systems at Wits University. In a moment, Catherine Main from the Money Savvy Group. You're with SAFM, 10 minutes to 9.
Mediated conversation on SAFM.
7 minutes to 9. Continuing your mediated conversation this morning around the two-pot pension system, which is being proposed. You've heard the experts. Catherine Main is an expert on personal finance, CEO of the Money Savvy Group. Catherine, good morning.
Good morning, Stephen.
When you look at individuals, this is obviously going to give you a lot more freedom. Are you expecting this to make quite a big change to people?
Stephen, I've been working in the pension industry for a couple of years, and I can tell you that a lot of the people that are drawing their money out of the pensions on an annual basis or when they're moving jobs, they're not doing it for a specific reason. They're doing it because they have access to the cash. And I feel like people will be dipping into this to give themselves a bonus, even if they don't need the money. And I'm thinking it's not going to be a very good idea.
So there's going to be too much temptation, especially if you're allowed to do it in your birthday month.
Exactly, way too much temptation. We are a buy now, pay later society with a very low saving culture. And if we start giving people access to the retirement savings, they're going to be dependent on their children to take care of them in their old age.
Is this a case where maybe we could say the amount of money that could be taken out instead of being one third should be a lot less than that? I don't know what the right limit would be. I think there might still be space to argue about what it should be.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the right solution is there with regards to the percentages, but I definitely think it has to be monitored. I think allowing people to do it on an annual basis is too frequent.
What other reform then? Because we see that people seem to be, in some cases, leaving their jobs or just taking their money when they can. Are there better ways to manage this problem, especially when the cost of living is going up so quickly?
Absolutely. There's such a lack of education around financial money management that if corporates actually brought people like us in to the organizations and we taught people how to start a side hustle, how to budget properly, you know, what are the pitfalls of debt and help them to get out of debt, they wouldn't need to be dipping into their savings because they'd be educated on being able to manage the money that they do have.
It seems to me that the cost of living is going up very quickly. Is this a bad time to even be having this conversation? In other words, we should not do a reform when people are so desperate for cash. I mean, I understand the desperation, but maybe this is just a bad time to do it.
Well, for the people that need it, it's going to be a good time for them. So because of the last 2 years with COVID, the people do need access to money. So I'm not saying it's a bad thing for everybody, but there's the majority of people that are going to abuse the system.
What other measures can we introduce to make sure that they don't? You talk about education. That always takes a long time.
So just making sure that there's proper interventions in place when people are drawing out of the money. Maybe we need a little bit more stringent system to see what they're using it for, that they're actually using it because they lost their job and they need to pay expenses rather than going on an annual holiday.
I can just imagine the argument about who gets to make those decisions.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm not sure what measures are going to help. But, you know, as us as individuals, it's our responsibility to make sure we can take care of ourselves. So really asking ourselves the tough question, do I need this money or do I want this money?
So, I mean, it seems to me that the temptation to access the one third is likely to always be there. At the same time, people are going to say, it's my money, and it is their money. That's where it's quite difficult for National Treasury to say no.
Yes, I agree. It is going to be hard. People do want access to their own money. The only pitfall is, you know, it's going to be bundled into their income for the year. They're going to end up paying a lot more tax. So they need to look at the tax implications.
The fact that you have to pay a lot more tax when you actually take money out now, does that stop people from doing it, even though they know they're giving up money, basically?
No, because when I work with these people that are taking their money out on their fourth or fifth time and I tell them what the tax implication is, they don't care. They just want the cash.
Why is that happening?
Lack of education around what it means to actually be drawing your pension. Desperation, so life-changing events, death of a partner, loss of a job, COVID. But mostly just a lack of education around how to manage money correctly.
That's something that, I mean, more and more you see that at schools, that children are being taught how to manage money at schools, not home economics, personal economics, accounting. I mean, these are things that weren't being taught at school when I was at school. Is that making a difference to people's habits at all, or is it too early to say?
I doubt it very much. I've got three teenage boys, and they're still teaching our kids about checkbooks in the textbooks. I don't know when the last time you saw a checkbook was, but my son came to me and he said, "Mom, what does a checkbook look like?" I was like, "Why are you asking me this? You're in grade 10, and they're still teaching our kids about checkbooks." So I think the level of financial education is definitely way behind the curve at a school level.
So we need to do it at school. Is it something we need to do at tertiaries as well, as people actually learning a qualification? Maybe there's an opportunity to do some teaching there too?
So mindsets are set between the ages of 4 and 12 in children. So we actually need to get right down to a primary school level and start initiating a saving culture and a saving mindset from between the ages of 4 and 12. And then it will stick.
Catherine Main, thanks very much indeed. Really do appreciate it. CEO of the Money Savvy Group, bringing an end to your mediated conversation today. My thanks also to Professor Alex van den Heerfer, Professor of Social Security Systems at Wits University. And then, of course, starting us off, Ismail Momoniat, the current Director General, the Acting Director General in the National Treasury, I should say, but he's actually the Deputy Director General for Tax and Financial Sector Policy. So, of course, a lot to come on that conversation. Look forward to how the debates actually continue. Don't forget, you've got to keep listening through the day. We're giving 8,600 Rand to lucky listeners, to 10 lucky listeners who are part of the birthday competition. To win your share of 86,000 Rand, you have to stay tuned to SAFM, SMS SAFM 86 and your name to 41391. We'll select a random number. And if a presenter phones you and asks, "What is the phrase that pays?" you have to tell us, you have to answer immediately, SAFM 86 to win 8,600 Rand. SMS is charged at a rate of 1 Rand 50 an SMS. Free minutes and SMS bundles do not apply. T's and C's do apply. Lots to come on SAFM today. Kathy will be with you from Stunza, Zelma, Banyana, Mdu, myself. Look after yourself. Have a good Thursday. You with SAFM leading the conversation. It's 9 o'clock.